So we're talking about Jonathan Livingston Seagull. Toby, this was the first book we read together.
It was. And when was this? What is it? 2012-ish.
Yeah, in Chicago.
In Chicago, right? Lincoln in North America.
That's right. Now, I can't remember. Why did we end up going to the bookshop? Did we go to get the book deliberately, or did we just go to have a look?
I think we went to have a look, but it was one of these. We had a fairly long lunch. We've just met, and we were both in that interesting place. And we were talking about the things we've read. And I think that some other book came up and we went, well, let's go to the bookshop. We have some time. And I think you mentioned Jonathan Livingston Seagull as a sort of, you should probably read this. It's not particularly long. And we went there and, well, you wound up buying two copies.
Yeah.
And then read it during that break.
We did. So it's a very short book, which is a good thing. Perhaps people won't know what Jonathan Livingston Seagull is. It's a very old book. So I'm just having a look at my copy now. I'm trying to figure out when it got printed, when it was actually written. So by Richard D. Bach, B-A-C-H, in 1970. Ooh. Oh, I thought it was his 60s, but it's a 70s book. There you go.
1970?
Yeah.
Oh, just made it over the line in 1970.
it was probably written in the 60s and it was published in 1970. There you go. So the copy I've got has got 87 pages. And lots of them are photos of seagulls because it's about a seagull.
Jonathan doing some seagull.
Are you going to tell us what it's about or what? Because I'm not reading it.
What's a good way to describe it, Toby?
Well, the book cover calls it the most celebrated inspirational fable of our time. I haven't seen it that celebrated. To me, it represents, it's a search of perfection and it's a search of meaning in a sense, but also a story of acceptance.
Yeah, and what I like about it is the thing about metrics. So basically, Jonathan Livingston Seagull wants to fly very fast. And so he practices his flying technique and he becomes very good at it. And eventually he gets mentored by a bright, shiny seagull. And that seagull helps him to understand that if you're aiming for a number, you can never get any better than that. What I like about it is I'd not realized until I read it that when you pick a number and say, let's go for that number, you actually limit yourself. So that's what the main thing I like about it.
I think that it touches upon, and I think that what made it such a good read for me at a time was that it touches upon all of these themes, like the problems of having a number like that. That's a metrics problem. It also actually touches upon the problems of, it's not enough of having the right idea in a sense. It's sort of, it's easy to become outcast simply because you're pursuing something that no one else is looking into. It has a very good argument around that, and also has, there's one section in it where essentially, and it's connected to the flying and the numbers, it's sort of, well, we fly for a reason and you should be focusing on the reason. But of course, Jonathan, what he does is he focuses on flying. And by that, he also transcends and excels at what is the purpose. So I think that there's a lot of these sort of threads in it that represents a lot of different perspectives on how to focus on things and sort of being limitless in imperfection. Packs a lot of philosophy into a fairly small package.
Yeah, I think also there's a risk with the book because it can be a little bit new age fluffy bunny type stuff as well. So it is a little bit of one of those stories where the seagull transcends and goes to different states, and there's even a seagull that sort of goes to slam into a cliff and ends up going through the cliff into a different space. So it's very easy to interpret the book as a bit fluffy, I think.
And it has it needs to be said, it has a super strong undertone of transcendence and acceptance, which sort of, if it's your thing, then it all makes sense. That's sort of the end of the road is acceptance and love. And it's actually totally ruining the plot, but it's also actually one of the key takeaways at some point when Jonathan ends up mentoring the next generation of flying gulls. They focus on the flying. They don't focus on transcending the flying. That there's a problem of mastery in that. And I think that's, so it does has that new age things, but I also think that it actually is something that do apply. And I think it applies to mentorship at large. At some point you end up so focused on the thing that you also forget that you had a reason for the thing. The passion sort of, for Jonathan, the passion transcends, but imparting that insight becomes problematic.
That's actually a really good point. So if we relate it back to being an agile coach or an evangelical agile coach, I think we sometimes come across, so this is where I'm thinking of it as a metaphor for coaching. So where Jonathan's sort of saying, hey, flying's fantastic, and he's telling the rest of the flock initially, who all they care about is flying, to go get food. So when he's telling them, no, it's fantastic to fly, there's other reasons to be flying and you can do all these awesome things, they can't even listen to him and end up casting him out because he's not fitting in, basically. So I think that happens to people as well. When we don't tune our message to the group that we're trying to speak to.
Definitely so. And I think that the problem he then runs into at a later point is that once he actually gets a following, he has mastered flight at that point. And as a coach, we could sort of think that, well, maybe that's mastering. If we would go all sort of fluffy agile on it, it would be we found the values, right? We've become value-based coaches. But people, his mentees then, they pick a certain aspect of flight, acrobatics, speed, low-level flight. And they focus on that. And it's very much like when you find someone forgetting that the end goal of process improvement, in a sense, is to deliver something, and they start focusing on mastering a particular way of doing that. So that might be a particular name, methodology, or a certain school of doing things. And then you end up in the same problem, that if you focus on solely mastering that thing, you actually get a goal displacement. It's not actually mastery at large, and it's not actually value delivery. It's just getting really, really good at high-speed flight. And that might also block you from going further, actually. It becomes just another trap. It becomes another impediment to the fabled perfection that Jonathan is after.
Because it's like you've branched off, gone down one path, and once you get too far down that path, you lose sight of the rest of it.
Yeah, the goal becomes that path, in a sense.
Yeah.
And I think that's the danger, and that's also when... I think that it illustrates that in a way that I think would resonate with a lot of people. That is actually a problem. You need to go down that path. And I think that that's the interesting tension in it. You need, in order to go further, you need to go down that path, but you need to also realize that the path isn't the goal, but to get anywhere, you need to focus on the path.
Yeah, so it's like focusing on where your feet are stepping rather than where the pathway is going. What I thought was interesting at that conference, because we suggested it as a topic, didn't we, that evening? Was it a lean coffee, or was it a different thing that Jim Benson was organising? Because we said, let's do Jonathan Livingston Seagull as a coaching metaphor.
Yeah, I think it was a lean coffee.
Yeah, and so we had that topic at a table. And what we didn't know until that point was that Jim's actually friends with Richard Buck's son. So it was really nice that Jim was able to tell his friend that we were talking about Jonathan Livingston Seagull at the conference, so that his friend could tell his father. Yeah, so I thought that was kind of cute as well.
Oh, that's wonderful. I had actually forgot that. That's wonderful.
Yeah, and I think at the time Richard Buck was not well because he'd been in a glider accident. So that was pretty cool.
I was just sort of thinking, oh, glider accidents. It's actually one of the things that I really love about the book. It really paints a picture of it being decidedly not fun. The path towards mastery isn't easy.
Yeah. He nearly damages himself a few times when he's trying to perfect his flying technique.
Yeah, he ends up struggling a lot. And that was something I actually appreciated the story a lot, that he did struggle. And that it was such an integral part of actually achieving something meaningful is that it's actually hard. If it doesn't push you to the limit where you're failing, you're probably not going anywhere spectacularly splendid either. And he sort of nearly gives up. But I think that's sort of that centering it, that the meaningful stuff is often also the hard stuff and the stuff that in a sense hurts us to an extent. It's sort of, it's painful.
Isn't that a racing car driver saying that if you're not coming off the road from time to time, you're not going fast enough?
I think that it's Mario Andretti, right? It's sort of, if everything is under control, you're going too slow.
Yeah, exactly.